We are live, episode number 5 of Bachelorette, unfiltered and unapologetic with Bradley and Dina, coming to you live on a Monday night following this week's episode, Hometown Dates, action-packed show on tap for you. This week we've got another former contestant of this season, Iggy from Chicago, not to be confused with Diggy, which is a mistake I made a couple times during the episode, but we're going to ask him all types of questions, including whether or not he does indeed, as Josiah said, inject steroids into his nuts. He answers it pretty candidly, so stay tuned for that and much, much more as we go behind the curtain with Iggy on his experience looking back and in the moment. As always, subscribe on iTunes, Bachelorette Unfiltered and Unapologetic. You can follow me at Twitter, at Bradley Basker, and you can follow me on Instagram at bbasker, B-B-A-S-K-I-R. Unfortunately, Dina is traversing the world once again, a little bit jealous that I'm not with her right now, experiencing the great outdoors, but alas, the show must go on. We're going to keep bringing you content week after week, and we hope you appreciate it. We got a great interview with Diggy. We talk a little bit about this week's episode, the hometown dates, kind of a boring episode if you ask me. We touch on it a little bit, ask him some questions about his experience with the final four guys, but more about this episode has to do with Iggy's experience, and he sets the record straight about what exactly happens both off camera and on camera, and everything that you ever wanted to know about the show, you're about to get over the next 45 minutes with the hottest questions, the hardest hitting questions, and the most candid, unfiltered, uncensored, unapologetic answers from Iggy. So without further ado, let's take it away with Iggy from Chicago. And with that, we bring in this year's, now unfortunately eliminated contestant, Iggy Rodriguez from Chicago, to Bachelorette Unfiltered and Unapologetic, our second guest. What's going on, Iggy?
I'm great, man. How are you?
We're doing well. Coming on the cusp of this week's episode, but we wanted to have you in. We obviously had your boy Diggy last week. We had to have Iggy so we could have the Diggy-Iggy combo.
Wouldn't make sense without both of us.
It just doesn't feel right. Last week, I didn't feel good posting the episode knowing we hadn't gotten you on yet.
Well, I appreciate the invite, man. I'm happy to do it.
That's great. So, obviously, you're on the show. 14,500 Instagram followers later. You've gotten a lot of publicity out this. But for those of you that haven't been watching or followed too closely, why don't you give us a little bit more of your background, kind of how you came to be to this point?
Sure. So I am originally from Los Angeles, born and raised in Pasadena. Been in Chicago for the last 7 years or so. You know, it's funny, my path to The Bachelorette is somewhat unique, I think. And they actually reached out to me via LinkedIn, one of the recruiters for the show, and was essentially like, hey, your professional resume is interesting. Your face isn't terrible. would you be interested in potentially coming on the show? At the time, I had actually recently broken up with my ex-girlfriend. I was a little down, and I was like, you know what? This is a really unique opportunity to kind of put myself back out there and find out a little more about myself. Hopefully engage in a really, really cool experience and kind of have this like once-in-a-lifetime thing happen. And ended up just saying, screw it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. And was fortunate enough to be selected this most recent season.
Now, did they have any indication from your LinkedIn that you were single, or was it just a flyer that they took on you?
No, it was definitely I don't post my marital status on LinkedIn.
I would think not.
Yeah. No, I think it was just a flyer. You know, they obviously go city to city, and they do. It seems like they do some recruiting before they head into a city in case there are some folks they might have an interest in based on some public profiles.
You know what? I'm a little bit sour right now because as someone that has applied to the show, both formally and also going on a casting call, no one reached out to me ahead of time, so you already got one up on me on that front.
Well, I appreciate that, man. In due time, you know, there's a lot of bachelor left.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, I'm more than happy to find the one before the show, but if push comes to shove, if producers come knocking, I'll be ready to get on out of that limo.
Yo, man, I'll put in a good word.
I appreciate that. All right, so you obviously got approached. You're like, hey, this is a good opportunity for me to start over and get out there. So first question out of the gate, is Iggy your birth name or is that just a nickname that you go with these days?
Full name is Ignacio. I grew up in a really small Well, I went to a really, really small private high school. My mom calls me an Oreo because I'm, like, dark on the outside and, like, white on the inside. So I didn't have a lot of ethnic friends growing up, and Ignacio was just way too hard for my little white friends. So Iggy was born as a result.
Now, did you find that people were confused on the show by your race? I mean, I'll be honest. I thought you might have been, like, Samoan or Hawaiian.
I get that a lot. I get, like, Filipino. I get some sort of islander person. I'm Cuban and Spanish. So it's a little bit of an interesting mix. Cuba is just a place where, like, a bunch of different cultures got together and hooked up. So you've got varying, like, shapes, sizes, and colors for Cuban folks.
That's great. I mean, like, the thing is, on the show, they don't really put your last names out there. So if I'd seen Rodriguez, I would have immediately been like, okay, Hispanic background.
Yeah, but right. Just, he's some sort of brown person.
Exactly. So I'm glad you cleared that up for our listeners. You are of Cuban descent. So we will mark that one down.
Thank you.
So talk us – so one thing that we didn't get to ask Diggy, and a lot of our listeners reached out and said, hey, you got to figure out more about this type of process. So once they reached out to you, can you talk about the process from that initial point to getting out of the limo? What was that entailed? Was there interview rounds, headshots, photo shoots, all that? Talk us through it. And also, it's a little bit of a self-fulfilling question on my part because obviously I want to know what to expect when they call my name.
For sure. No, there are multiple rounds of interviews. So you have a face-to-face. You also have a video you have to create. So you got a video you have to create, and you pass that first level of screening. And if they like that, they'll come to your city and say, hey, we've got a crew coming in, and we want to just see you on camera for the first time and see how you react to that. If they like that from there, they invite you to Los Angeles to meet the producers and give you a little more of a taste of what it's actually like to be on the show. It is very, very intensive. Everything from, making sure that you are not a criminal, right? Like going through some of your personal and professional history and making sure that you are who you say you are, along with a lot more on camera time. And again, questions from, I believe it was every single producer on the show. So somewhat of an intimidating atmosphere if you're not used to being on camera.
Now, do they also ask you personality questions? I've read about some stuff online just to make sure that you're a fit both with The Bachelorette and just what they're looking for, the ethos of the show.
Yeah, they certainly do. A lot of that comes out through conversation. A lot of it is organic. You talk a lot. As you'll see on the show, too, they prep you in the interview process by asking a lot of questions over and over again. And during the show, a lot of it is you being asked questions, right? And having to be able to be okay, really being genuine and articulating your feelings really well. And if you can do that, then that's something they look for sure. So it's a pretty arduous process once you're in LA.
And then you got through LA, you clearly passed with flying colors. Did you at that point feel good about your chance of getting selected, or did you just feel like it was a toss-up?
You know when you take that test in college, you're like, maybe I got an A, maybe I fucking failed. Like, I have no idea. It was the exact same thing. Okay. I thought it went well, but, I mean, you've seen the guys and kind of like the level of the caliber of guys in the season. They're all really good-looking, cool, successful dudes. So I feel very fortunate to be a part of that group. I had no idea whether or not I was going to make it when I left LA, but again, very fortunate to be part of that group of guys.
That's great. And one thing that I think differentiates you from the others is, I mean, a lot of times you find people that came, they're, physical trainers, male models. You're a very successful businessman. You've got your own consulting company. Do you sort of get that vibe that you're a little bit different when you're with the boys, or is it just once you're together, kind of what you do and what your background is kind of irrelevant?
From a professional standpoint, we're not comparing resumes, right? It's just about being one of the guys, and I am as much one of the guys as anyone. Played football in college, played rugby, like semi-professionally for a while, and I'm as much of a meathead jock as I am a nerd and professional. So it was really easy to befriend so many of the guys because a lot of us share a lot of common interests.
Yeah, and obviously you come together, you've got one common interest on the show, allegedly, which is Rachel, right? So that would make sense. So You found out you're getting on the show. How much prep did you do in terms of watching previous seasons? Had you already been a fan of the show? Diggy talked about he really didn't do much prep because he just wanted to go in there, no preconceived notions. Is that how you took it, or did you get some homework done?
No, I share the same sentiment as Dig. I didn't want to, like, deep Google Rachel because I think that's weird. Like, you don't do that when you're going on a first date with a regular person in the real world. So I knew of Rachel and kind of had, like, gave, like, a cursory overview of who she was and kind of what she's about. But I know the show. I mean, I've organically been a fan for a handful of seasons. I had a buddy who was on it, you know, I think 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm familiar with it enough to not have to really do a ton of research before going in.
Okay. And then when you went in, did you feel like you wanted to be one of the guys that was notable in terms of publicity and FaceTime, or did you just want to go in and stay under the radar? Kind of like Matt, right? Matt made it to the final six with very little FaceTime just because he didn't really – you know, get involved in the muck. What was your stance going in terms of how you're going to approach this competition?
I kind of wanted to let it come to me a little bit. I didn't have any. It's really hard to prepare for that as well because you don't know what you're getting into until you're there, and then all of a sudden you're just thrust in this really unique environment that you've never been in before, and you're trying to make sense of all the questions and the camera time and kind of meeting new people and living in this house with strangers, right, where you're supposed to share, like, your most intimate moments and feelings with. So there's a lot that goes on, and I think any plan that you have sort of just goes away when you walk in. It wasn't my intention to try and get airtime or, to narrate the show a bunch. It just, you sort of end up becoming part of the show. And the producer's responsibility is to take what happens in everyday life and create storylines around that. We all did the same number of interviews. You know, we all did the same number of, conversations with, with Rachel and with the producers. And it's a matter of what storylines kind of come up naturally throughout that filming process that determines who's getting FaceTime, who's speaking and who's not.
That's actually really interesting to find out. I didn't realize that. I figured they're readily able to determine, who's going to be better on camera, who's not, and they just sort of leave the ones that are less relevant and less exciting on camera just by the wayside. You're telling me they kind of give everyone a shot, and then they see what comes out of it, and then they make the decision from there from a production standpoint.
Well, there are certainly some personalities that are better suited for having those candid one-on-one conversations that you see a lot of. Matt's personality, for example, and I was on Paradise with Matt. He is a fucking amazing human being. Like, so funny once he actually, like, gets to know you and starts talking, and the biggest sweetheart you'll ever meet. But he is a little more reserved initially, and, that doesn't necessarily make for great TV, right? If he's like, hey, I like Rachel, she's cool, and that's sort of the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
There are certainly the types of personalities that are able to do that and some that are a little more reserved. And again, we're all given the same opportunity to speak. Some people do it better than others. And some people have, sort of this potentially different opportunities to be on screen because of things that happen naturally in the house.
Yep. No, that makes sense. We talked about that. I mean, Matt just seems like a good guy, almost too good of a guy where he just sort of ended in the friend zone type of thing. He's the type of guy you'd want to wing for you. He's the type of guy you'd want to be your husband. So I get that. But he doesn't put asses in seats. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, again, I would marry Matt. Like, that's how dope.
It's a good dude. I honestly wouldn't say I get attached emotionally to a lot of characters in the show, but if you watched last week, I got kind of a lump in my throat the way she was just – Rachel was so upset letting someone with as good of a heart as Matt go. It was tough to see.
Yeah, he's awesome.
All right, so really one of the things that people remember the most is getting out of the limo. I want to know – what kind of planning did you do going into that to make sure that it was most memorable? And or when you get into the moment, how much of it is just you flying blind and blacking out versus actually feeling like you're in control?
I'd say I browned out. Like, I sort of remember it. You have a game plan, right? Just like walking into the house and like, I want to do this in the house. You have a game plan, but the moment you step out of that limo, you fucking just lose it. Like, all of a sudden, there are cameras on you. There are cameras following you. There's this big production. There's boot. Like, all of a sudden, it's very, like, the moment you walk out of that limo, that door slams behind you, and it sounds like it's, like, a million pounds. It's a, like, deafening door slam, and you're like, holy shit, I'm actually doing this. Like, I'm walking this path that I've seen on TV a million times. I'm walking up to this girl. I have this thing in my head that I want to say, and, you know, hopefully it comes out okay. And before you know it, you're just in the house meeting people, and it's like, I don't even remember what I told her. Truth be told, I actually forgot to introduce myself. You didn't see that. But I walk up and I say my spiel, and as I'm walking away, she grabs my hand, and Rachel's like, hey, what's your name? My name's Iggy, not to be confused with Diggy, who in like the order of things was actually right before me out of the limo.
Okay, that's great. Wow. I can't even imagine. Just, yeah, I don't even know what to say. That's at least you're able to make light of it.
You know what? If there's one thing that I've learned throughout my experience, it's to make light of it. You've just got to be okay laughing at yourself during this thing.
It seems that way. And it seems like the group of guys this season have just been pretty chill about most things. Even when we talked to Diggy last week about, you know, the Waboom versus Blake and Lee and the racism, it just seems like most of the guys were able to just brush it off. And, you know, it's, goons are going to be goons, and you just got to take it, you know, with a grain of salt.
For sure.
So when you walk in, right, you go whatever number you were, and the guys start piling in, and, you know, Lee's got his guitar, and Adam's got Adam Jr., all that. Who did you feel like was your number one or top two competitions? You know how guys are. You size everyone up in the club, right? You kind of know who you feel like you're going to be going at. Who were those, you know, top two or three guys for you that you were like, this is going to be trouble?
No doubt Peter was one of those guys. I'm like, this fucking guy is handsome as shit. He's really, and he's like, he's a really, really cool dude. Peter and I got very, very close. And, you know, kind of seeing him right away, I'm like, damn, this is a good looking dude. Peter for sure. I looked around the house, and I think Brian was another guy. I'm like, damn, good looking guy. He's a little older. He's got some stuff going on. And I think for me, it was probably those two guys. It was Peter and Brian, where I'm like, these guys look like they got some stuff.
And clearly you were prophetic, because early on you could just tell that they had the it factor with Rachel. I mean, Rachel was very physically overt with Peter, and Brian just sort of took the physicality to Rachel throughout, and you could just tell that they had a connection. So astute observation by you out of the gate. Did you feel like, you know, someone like Waboom, you know, you look go back to last scene, you have someone like Corinne, you could just tell was a little bit eccentric, obviously going to ruffle some feathers, but she made it quite far. Did you feel like Waboom had a shot, or did you just feel like this guy is going to be one and done very, very quickly?
I would have questioned the entire process a lot more if he would have gone further. I think we all understood that he was there sort of pushing his own agenda, and it was very apparent to all of us there why he came on the show. But also, with that being said, you don't know what anyone is like with their one-on-one time with Rachel. He could have been a fucking sweetheart and the smoothest guy in the room. You don't really know that. We didn't get that sense, and I think we're right. But I think him getting cut as quickly as he did was something that we all saw coming, and we would have been surprised had that not been the case.
Yeah, no, I think the producers maxed out sort of his watchability, and for a couple episodes it was great, but I think people got tired really quickly of the Waboom act. I think Blake
much quicker than you did, trust me.
Well, you could just tell. I mean, the body language of the guys, again, the producers did a nice job portraying. I mean Diggy had like that look on his face when he walked in, and you could just tell people were not thrilled with Waboom. Blake obviously took the brunt of that, as looking like the villain of going at Waboom. Yeah. But I think he took the bullet for everyone in the house.
Although he did it differently, I think we all shared similar sentiments.
Yeah, that's sort of what I gathered. All right, we asked Diggy this last week. We said, what is one thing that the viewers don't get to see on this show that you can tell us something about behind the scenes? Diggy told us the rose ceremonies can be incredibly long, especially the first night. He said, you know, went into the wee hours of the morning. Give us some other behind the scenes that doesn't break your contractual obligations that you can tell us about the show that you wouldn't have known had you just been a viewer.
You have no idea how close we get and how quickly it happens. We spend every waking moment with each other, which is a lot of the day, because you're actually like talking and engaging and kind of going through your one-on-one moments with producers all day, all night. And all you have to do is hang out with these new friends you're making. We're talking, you know, 20 hours a day sometimes. As Diggy mentioned, some of those rose ceremony nights are very, very long. And if you're not on a date, you're just in the house hanging out. And all of a sudden, you're sharing, like, very intimate, very emotional moments that you're trying to express to producers, but you're also now organically you just start talking about those things because you don't have a TV, you don't have a cell phone, you don't have a computer, you have no access to the outside world. So all you're doing is creating relationships with people in the house. It's actually really, really nice. You know, I don't think I've ever been that detached from my phone or like from humanity in general. And it forces you to really engage in the experience. My favorite stories, it's actually Diggy's involved in this as well. It was myself, Dino, Dig, and Kenny King. And we're not on the group date. I think it was the Ellen date, maybe. And we're sitting around, and Kenny and Dig are like, "Do you guys know how to play spades?" And Dino and I are like, "No, but what the fuck else are we doing? Like, we'll learn." We played spades for 12 straight hours. And between the four of us, drank two massive bottles of Hennessy and pineapple. and we're just talking, and we're just getting to know each other, and just learning about each other, and playing spades, and like being boys and bullshitting for legitimately 12 straight hours. I think I blacked out as a result of playing spades for 12 hours. Like, it was one of my favorite moments now.
That's unbelievable. Like, what other games are? I mean, you talking Settlers of Catan, Monopoly, or is it really just cards?
Man, I was trying to get Settlers in the house. No one brought it. We literally only had playing cards. That was like our only thing we could do. There's no other games that you can have. It was like, I called it plush prison. Like, it was really nice. I got all the food and drinks that I wanted. I laid by the pool and I hung out and I tanned. But I couldn't go anywhere, and I couldn't do anything, and I couldn't read anything, only play cards.
That's unbelievable. How did you stay in shape with no gym?
Yeah, that one's rough. I think you see a lot of the guys get a little softer towards the end of the season. there's a hill behind the house. It's probably like, I would say it's like 40, 50 meters, and it kind of like winds. It's maybe like 30, 40 degree gradient. Like, you can sprint up that and stay in some shape. People brought bands. I got really creative, and when like production wasn't looking, I would take those heavy sandbags that weigh cameras down and lights down, and like try and like curl those things or something. but it drives you kind of crazy because I think we all go in trying to look and feel our best. I mean, you really only get to be on camera maybe one or two times, right? And we all had withdrawals from the gym, for sure.
I can imagine. I mean, listen, you got millions of girls watching the show. If you're not going to make Rachel's heart, you at least want to look swole for the rest of them.
Hey, man, I wanted to put my best foot forward, that's for sure.
All right, let's quick hitters about some of the other guys in the mansion. Who was the funniest guy in the mansion? And once you give your answer, I'll tell you what Diggy said.
That's funny. I think it's a toss-up. I thought Diggy was hilarious. I mean, him and I became—we're actually neighbors. If he didn't tell you that,
he said that. He said like 90 feet apart or something like that.
Yeah, we were separated by an alley, which is insane. Diggy and I became very close. He's hilarious. You know what? I hate to say this because like America already fucking loves the kid, and he's like one of my best friends too. But Dean's hilarious. Like, Dean and I would—you know those moments when you're laughing with your best friend and you like don't know if you're gonna die or not. Like, we would have those moments, and like him and I would have the most amazing conversations and just joke and play around, and like that Hennessy game is a good example, but he's a super funny kid.
That's great. Yeah, it's funny, you didn't see too much of that sense of humor out of Dean. I felt like he was on the more serious side in front of the cameras, but clearly off camera, different guy, and I feel like that's where the personality really comes out. By the way, Diggy said himself.
Of course he fucking did. I knew he was going to.
But I said the next time we have a contestant on, we're going to corroborate you saying that. And sure enough, you confirmed it, which I'm sure is just going to stroke his ego even more in case he needed it anymore.
He's going to love it when I text him right after this.
All right. Who is – obviously, we know about you and Diggy. We know about you and Dean. Were there any other guys that you felt like you got really close with as part of the show? Peter, also, you said.
Yeah, Peter's my guy for sure. You know, there's a lot of us. You know, there's a lot of us on a text chain that stay very connected. Peter, without a doubt, became one of my best friends. Dean, Peter, and I became very, very close as we traveled around to Hilton Head. We shared a lot of playing time together, and it was great to get to know those guys, and they'll be my best friends for a very long time.
That's great.
Diggy, for sure. Kenny King is an amazing human being. Guys like Adam and Matt were just awesome to be around. So much fun to hang out with. Will's fucking hilarious. Will didn't get a ton of screen time, but the dude is really smart and really funny. Anthony is another Chicago guy I became close with, and there were very few guys that I wasn't friends with, right? I think, you know, Lee and Waboom as a result of just him being a character. Lee was weird, and I think that the things that came out after the show with his tweets and Instagram posts, I think sort of crystallized how we felt. There was a weirdness that we felt about him, but couldn't quite put our finger on it, and I think it was explained.
All right, so the thing that everyone wants me to ask you about, this is really what got you the most flack and the most blowback, was how the producers portrayed you as, for lack of a better way of saying this, a tattletale a couple times. You used your one-on-one time with Rachel. You talked about some other guys. You called out Josiah and said you weren't sure he was there for the right reasons. I want to give you this opportunity to set the record straight, because as we can tell in the first, you know, 30 plus minutes of this interview, you're a pretty good dude. And I wonder whether that was the way, you know, the producers just decided they wanted to portray you. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, you know, I think you've got to take ownership over everything that happened, which I completely do. You know, I said the things I said and I meant them in the moment. But there is so much context around any conversation that you see on TV. Again, you spend 20 hours a day awake being filmed. There are millions of hours of conversations that you don't see. And I think specifically to the incident with Josiah, when I'm speaking with Rachel, all you see is me talking about Joe. Maybe 30 seconds of screen time with me and her. What you don't see is the other 40 minutes that I was speaking to her. So I told you before, I think the responsibility of the crew and the producers after finding someone for Rachel is to create content that's watchable. And what you don't see is Rachel asking me very bluntly for my opinion. And her saying, hey, you seem like someone who is really beloved in the house. I respect your opinion. We've had really good conversations thus far. What are your thoughts? But you don't see that, right? Because you're not supposed to. And, you know, Joe comes out, and Joe is Joe. Look, I love the guy. We did an event together in Florida 2 weeks ago. Like, we're buddies, man. We talk all the time. And I have a mutual respect for Joe. And, you know, I think he would say the same thing. That when you're in that environment and drinks are flowing and you're upset and you're kind of, you know, trying to defend yourself, you say things that you maybe wouldn't say under normal circumstances, because these are not normal circumstances. So I think first and foremost, hey, man, everything that happened, right? Or else they wouldn't air it. But I think people need to understand that there's so much more that goes into those conversations than just the snippets of time that everyone sees. And to take what they see at face value, because that's exactly what it is. Right? It's face value.
Wow. That actually does set the record straight. And I'll be honest, I'm not a veteran of the show. I always assumed it was quick sticks, those conversations. You have 5-6 minutes and then you maximize it if you want, or you could talk about someone else. You would never know that there's so much more conversation that goes on. And you probably watch that back and you're just cringing as you read your Twitter mentions blowing up, and you're just like, I'm the victim here. Like, this is not me.
Yeah, but again, you know, you've got to laugh that stuff off. And I mean, going into the show, you've got to be okay with that stuff happening if it happens. Like, I'm a big boy. I can deal with the repercussions if of the things that I've done. And they're not like these egregiously horrible actions, right, that I'm taking. I was asked a question. I answered a question. I went to Joe. I told him the truth about it. He was obviously upset, which he has every right to be. He said some stuff. Some of it pretty funny. He said some stuff, right? And shit happens, and it's over. And for us, what you don't see is that it was over that night. Like, Joe and I went back to the hotel, and we had a fucking drink about it. We were like, dude, that was dumb. I'm so sorry. And he's like, yeah, I said some shit you're not going to love. I'm sorry. And it's done, right? Like we're boys at the end of it.
Exactly.
But you don't see that stuff.
That's super interesting. One of the things he said, I don't really want to talk a lot about balls, but one thing that he did say is that you injected steroids into your nuts. And I just want to ask you point blank, do you inject steroids into your nuts, Iggy?
I've answered this question before. I don't think medically – I'm not a doctor, right? But I don't think medically that's a thing. No, I can say very certainly that does not happen. Look, dude, I'm a – I don't know if you see on the show because I always got like a shirt. I'm a big dude. And I was one of the bigger dudes in the house. And the running joke was that, like, Iggy was on steroids, which is honestly, it's been, like, my entire life. I'm just a big, thick guy. And, you know, that was kind of the running gag. And, you know, Joe kind of ran with it a little further than I would have liked him to, but it's all good.
That's great. Well, thank you for clearing the air on that one, because I was honestly skeptical.
Well, you know what? So, I honestly, it's weird, but I take that as a compliment.
No, listen, I'll be honest.
On steroids, I'm probably pretty jacked up as a result.
No, you're definitely built like a truck in the best way.
The best kind of truck.
All right, any other unfortunate edits that you experienced watching it back? I know one of the examples that stood out was there was an article that came out about how Jack Stone's one-on-one was really mischaracterized. It looked like he never made out with her during the one-on-one. He talked about locking her up and hanging out in the bedroom together. Anything like that that happened to you where you're just like, that's not exactly how it happened, outside of what we just talked about?
Yeah, man. Again, it's all about context, right? I mean, you're shown what they want you to see, man. So again, did the things happen? Yes, those things happened. But is there a much bigger story around those snippets of time? Yes, absolutely. But America is very, very quick to come to judgment, and they believe exactly what they see as gospel, and it's not necessarily the truth. And, you know, call it edit, call it whatever, call it storyline. Some guys have a certain portrayal, some guys have a different portrayal. And I think that you see it every season, right? Like, there are a couple staple conversations that happen every year, and I kind of got caught in the trap of, well, I said something about Josiah during my one-on-one time. That happens every single year. You're a fan of the show. You know that happens.
Yep.
And it's just kind of being – it's being typecast a little bit. But look, you know what you signed up for. You've got to be okay with it. I am an adult human dude, and shit happens, and it's okay.
Yeah, no, you've got the right attitude about it, and I that's kind of what we're looking for in the characters. It's just people that, you know, it could have been any of us that were in that situation, and I feel like you've carried yourself the right way since it's aired.
Only way you can do it, man.
All right, last couple questions before we actually get into this week's episode and we move on from here. So how has your life changed since you've been on the show, specifically since it's aired, and specifically how has your game in the club with the ladies transformed since you've been on the show?
Life's a little different. Diggy and I went to Pitchfork, which is a festival in Chicago, the other day, and maybe got 20 feet into the festival before we sort of just stood there and took pictures for a while. Dude, it's really, it's so fun and really flattering, and it's so cool. I don't think I'm gonna get used to it. You know, kind of people. This is actually kind of a funny story. I was going to 7-Eleven for like a nightly Gatorade run at 7-Eleven. I was going to 7-Eleven to get a Gatorade, and this car drives by, and it's these two girls, and they're like 12 probably, and they go Iggy, and they yell, and I turn around and I wave, and then I'm in 7-Eleven grabbing a Gatorade with my buddy, and that car apparently went down the street, pulled a U-turn, drove to 7-Eleven, jumped out of the car to take a photo with me. And I'm like, yo, I'm me, and I don't think I'm worth that U-turn. But that's really sweet. Thank you. So it's definitely different. You know, kind of the recognition is cool, and it is fun. I you know, I'd be lying if I told you that it wasn't really flattering and didn't feel good. So it's cool. The game, you know, I would like to think that my game was pretty tight before the show. You know, I'd like to think that it hasn't changed too much after it.
Well, you do seem also pretty humble. It obviously hasn't expanded your ego too much. So it's good to know that guys haven't gotten too, you know, high and mighty coming out of that. But you deserve the accolades, man. You made it top 30 in the country for a show like that. You deserve everything you've got coming to you.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, last thing. I want you to talk about Bachelor in Paradise, give you an opportunity to plug it. But really what we want to hear about, August 14th, it's coming up. It's big. You were on the trailer tonight.
Yeah, man. The promo was lit.
It was lit AF. I'll tell you that much. So the big thing coming out of that was obviously the Corinne DeMario thing. I don't want you to put any of them on blast. You got relationships. But talk us through just what the experience was like being there when it was all going down, how you heard about it, what it was like to go back home and then come back again, and how that dynamic was before and after.
Sure. And I will say this first and unprompted. Demo is a friend. Like, I am really happy, and I've said this in a couple different publications, I'm really happy that ABC and Time Warner Legal didn't find any signs of legal misconduct on behalf of DeMario and Corinne. I'm glad that he got a chance to communicate his side and hopefully is exonerated, certainly legally exonerated, hopefully he's exonerated in the public as well. Look, he fucked up big, right? He got kicked off the show. He had homegirl with the headband thing. Like, it was a bad look for him. But, again, you know, people are throwing stones in a glass house, right? It's like everyone's made a mistake. He's just happened to be in public on national television. And is he an idiot? Yes, he was an idiot for doing that. But he's not a bad guy. He's just made that a really bad mistake. So I will say that unprompted. Demo is a friend. I am glad that from a legal standpoint, he's been exonerated. It feels good to see that.
It's great. And the show itself, obviously probably a pretty cool experience being in paradise with beautiful women. You hopefully took advantage of that.
It was the best, man. I had a really, really good time. It was a chance to get back with some of the guys from, you know, from our season, from Rachel's season. And to be in that environment is so much fun. You've got all the food you could ask for. You've got a bartender making, you know, craft cocktails, man. Like, you're in the most beautiful environment you can imagine, this private getaway beachfront property with some of your best friends and some new best friends that you're making. It's a lot of fun. It's very easy to get kind of swept away in the moment. As a teaser, I will tell you that there is no doubt some drama that goes on the beach because it is inevitable. but it's a lot of fun. I hope people really like the season. I know that I enjoyed myself a ton.
That's great. Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. This will be my first Bachelor in Paradise experience. So from the hype you just brought, I'm like ready to run through a wall. Tell you that much.
Honestly, it's going to be awesome.
That's great. All right, let's get into tonight's episode. Appreciate all the background. I feel like we've seen the new side of Diggy, so we've cleared the air there. Obviously,
Diggy, by the way, which happens.
Oh, it's that's on me. That's on hand up. Yeah. That's my bad. We'll cut that.
I will tell you, I'll respond for a few minutes, but I kind of got to jump here and I'm like five.
Okay, no problem. Let's move this through this pretty quickly. We'll go through the four guys on this episode. So number one, Eric, his hometown date. The biggest thing I took out of it was that he continued to bang home the point that he had never brought home a girl before. Early on in the season, they talked about how he'd never really been in a real relationship. And a lot of guys kind of called him out on that. So like, how do you feel like you're ready for love if you've never even had a real relationship? How did you feel about Eric, and now watching it back, like, do you feel like in retrospect he just needed time to get into the relationship mindset?
You know, Eric is one of those guys where I didn't have as much dialogue as some of the other guys in the house, and I didn't know his entire background the way that it was communicated today. I was a fan today, right? I didn't know, I had an idea of what was coming because we all talk about it, but I was a fan today, and it was really interesting to see the way that Eric grew up. And I think Eric is so used to, or it seems like even by his own kind of admission, that he'd received love a certain kind of way. And it was kind of like a sheltered, you know, it wasn't very affectionate type of love when he was growing up. And I think that maybe he just, that's the way that he expresses love himself, right? There's a difficulty there. And I wouldn't have known that because I didn't have a chance to really dive into him and his past and his family the way that it was displayed tonight. But look, man, we all love a certain way, and Eric is no different. And it seems like him not being able to like open up and express himself a certain way as a result of some of the things that he went through when he was younger. So it was actually it was really compelling. It was interesting to see that side of Eric because I didn't know that side living in the house.
I honestly, as a viewer as well, I got the wrong impression of Eric out of the gate as well. He just sort of seemed more uptight and thin skin, and you can tell it's the opposite. He's got very thick skin. He's a tough dude, comes from a great family, and he's very affectionate. So, yeah, it's interesting how this show, you can flip on characters very, very quickly. All right, let's move over to Brian's date. I got to ask you a couple questions about Brian. Brian was my pick to win after the first episode. Is Brian the smoothest talker in the house? Because, man, he does not screw up verbally ever.
He's got some experience, too. I think he knows what he's doing. He certainly is a smooth talker. Also a cool dude. I mean, he was friends with all of us in the house. I don't really have a bad thing to say about Bri. You know, he is what you see on TV. Again, there's always more context to any conversation, but he is that smooth motherfucker. Like, that's him. And he just, that's who he is. That's how he's built. It's funny to see on TV because when he's in the house, like, he's smooth with us, right? Like, we're friends, and we're kind of chopping it up and telling jokes, and, like, he's smooth with the guys. And to see how he is with Rachel, it's like, damn, the guy's got some game over there. so that's just him. He just got it like that.
Yeah, no, he really is. I honestly am waiting for a misstep, and it just hasn't come yet. So the question with Brian to me is, he's 37. He's got so much that he brings to the table. He's charming. He's got the good looks, good family. Do you think the biggest roadblock in him finding someone has just been the mom? I mean, you saw her on TV tonight, and I do feel like she's the biggest obstacle thus far.
I have a Latin mother. I get it. Latin mothers, especially of their sons, are very, very protective. It is just an innate cultural thing. So call it a hurdle, call it a roadblock, call it whatever you want. But that is just the way a Latin mother knows how to love. Like, they don't know how to do it another way. And that's something that, you know, if Rachel ends up being with Brian, she's got to be all right with the sassy Latin, you know, mother-in-law. Like, that's just who they are. And they're not going to change now. But I will tell you that if you're good to their kids and, you know, if Rachel ends up being with Brian and she's good to Brian, the mom will love you like you're their own kid. And that's just how it works.
Yeah, and I got that vibe. She does seem like she's a rough on the outside, but you break through that outside, there's a lot of warmth to be had there.
For sure.
All right, so moving on to Peter's date. The thing with Peter, I just felt like at this stage, you know, you may know something more than us, no spoilers, but it just feels like Peter is on the fence. He was the only one that didn't drop the L word this episode. He talked about how he was really happy with how the day went. You just didn't say even really like you. You didn't say I love you. What do you feel like how Peter, what's going through Peter's head right now? You kind of saw him behind the scenes. Do you just think he's just not sure Rachel's the one at this stage?
That's what it appears to be on screen. And again, I'm a fan this episode, right? Like, I don't know much more because we really can't talk about what happens next.
Yep.
So I don't know what happens next. If I told you I did, I'd be lying. but it seems that way. Peter is an amazing human being, and he's a very, very smart guy, and he knows what he wants emotionally. It's not to say that it comes, you know, that he wants that to come easily or that it comes easy for him to feel a certain way. Look, Peter is a very pragmatic dude. And I think he understands that he is in this very unique situation. And it seems to me that he's questioning, you know, how valid his feelings are, how valid Rachel's feelings are, considering that they are, you know, kind of falling in love, it seems like, in this very unique environment. And I think he's right to have those questions. I think he's right to question the process. And I think he's right to question the way that he feels and questions the way that she feels. Because it is so unique and it is different, and there are a lot of opportunities for an individual to get overcome by their emotions because all you do is live in your head while you're on the show. So I think Peter is just doing his due diligence and being very judicious with his approach, and it may come off as standoffish on TV and to people in, you know, TV land, but I think he is just taking a more emotionally cautious approach.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly a normal approach for someone. I mean, it's hard to really love someone, I would think, after 6 weeks, realistically. So it does seem like Peter is, like you said, pragmatic.
It's
all right.
Not crazy, right? People have gotten married in 6 weeks that were not on a show, but it's rare.
It's rare. But, I mean, if anyone – you're going to fall in love with anyone. Rachel seems like a good candidate because of what she brings to the table. All right, last two questions before we let you go. Dean's date. All right, I don't really want to get into the whole family aspect, and we can, you know, go talk about that till the cows come home. But how much did Dean talk to you guys about the family dynamic back at home, or was he more reserved about it as he seemed to be with Rachel? He just seemed uncomfortable talking about it until it actually was at the forefront. Did he talk about that stuff with you guys?
Not with everyone. Dean and I became very, very close, and I knew about his family well before the events took place on TV for everyone to see tonight. And I will preface my comment by saying that I love Dean. He is one of my very best friends, and he will remain one of him and I holding our babies from the first episode is the background of my phone. Like, that's how much I love the kid. He's like the little brother I never wanted. Like, I love the guy. But he had a rough upbringing, and not upbringing, but he had a really difficult situation that happened in his life that affected him and his family in a really profound way that very few people understand. And it's made him such a beautiful human being.
Yeah.
And to see that sort of in living color and in practice tonight, it hurts me because he is such a good friend and such a good guy that he even had to go through that and has to go through that. And look, he's going to be fine. He's Dino, but there is going to be some scrutiny over the way his dad chooses to live his life and his family and some question marks about him. And that's really unfair because he is a wonderful human being. So it sucked to hear it. And it was a privilege to hear it because he trusted me enough to kind of explain what his family was like as a result of his mother passing away. But to see it was different, right? Like, I felt it on him, and I'm like, that sucks, and that can't feel good. So it was tough to watch because he's a good buddy.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, Dean is just one of those. I feel like he's one of America's sweethearts. Just seems like a good guy. You obviously early on in the season you learn about his mother passing away, and I do feel like it pulled on the heartstrings of America. So we definitely wish him well. And it was hard to watch, very hard to watch. But again, it takes a special kind of person to one be willing to do that on camera and to confront what was clearly a fear of his. So really a special dude.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, Iggy. Let us know where we can find you on social media. I'm sure a lot of our listeners, if they haven't already, would like to know where they can find you.
Cool. So Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter is Iggy, IGGY, _ Rodriguez with a Z. Hit me up. I'm happy to answer any questions. I try and get back to DMs as much as I can. And again, man, I appreciate you having me on. It was fun. And if you have anything else, let me know.
All right. Appreciate it, Iggy. Good luck with your business endeavors. Good luck with the ladies. Hope you find love in the not-so-distant future.
I appreciate that, brother. Good luck with your endeavors, man. Hopefully we can get you on the show, too.
That'd be great. Thanks, man.
All right, bro.
And that was our interview with Iggy Rodriguez. At this point, we've now had Diggy. We've had Iggy. Again, we keep bringing you the best contestants. We're going to keep pushing, getting more. I hear a little birdie said that we might get a little Waboom action after the Men Tell All episode. No promises, but I heard some sources. They'd be telling me that a little Waboom action might be coming. So stay tuned. As always, subscribe on iTunes, Bachelorette Unfiltered Unapologetic. Share it with your friends. Post it on social media. Help us grow the brand. And we'll keep bringing you the best and hottest takes about The Bachelorette as we roll into the end of this season. Coming up on the final three now, final two, the winner. Then we go into Bachelor in Paradise. And before we know it, it's Bachelor season again. You can follow me on Instagram at bbasker, BBASKIR, at Bradley Basker, BRADLEYBASKIR on Twitter. And don't forget to support our guest on this episode, Iggy Rodriguez from Chicago, at IGGY _RODRIGUEZ. He's a good dude. Really kind of flipped on him there. Like I said, the producers really didn't portray him in the best light, but that's not his fault. As you heard from him, that's just how the cookie crumbles when you deal with reality TV, and he set the record straight tonight. So I'm definitely on Team Iggy now, and I was just like I was on Team Diggy. I could see why Diggy and Iggy get along. Good dudes. just makes you realize that these are just normal guys that happen to get their fame, you know, for being on a reality TV show. It could happen to any of us. Episode number 5 in the books. Thank you for all your support. Keep it coming. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back next week to recap the final 3.